So last week, at the end of the class last week, we began discussing the beginning of Parak Aleph of Shmuel Aleph. Right, we looked at the pasuk, but we had a couple of points. We didn't really get to delve into it too deeply. So I'm going to load up the share screen with a source sheet from the end of last week, and just refresh our memories and jump in. Right. So the Navi began by telling us that there's a person named Elkanah. Right. We're given his whole extended lineage, the reason why. It turns out, right, you look at Divrei Hayamim, which Rashi quotes, and this person Elkanah is actually a Levi, right? Two wives, Chana and Penina. Chana has no children, Penina has many children. They go to Shiloh every year. Right? Chana is miserable, and that's where we left off last week. Pasuk Psukim Tes and Yud, where we had this contrast between Eli the Kohen Gadol and Chana. Right, Chana is getting up and going to the Mishkan while Eli is sitting on his chair, right, which is a little bit jarring. You're not supposed to be sitting in the Mishkan. Mefarshim had different explanations as to why, but the overall image is certainly that that he's the more passive and less reverent person here, right? Well, Chana is the one who is getting up, who's going to the Mishkan, and then who is davening, right? But this Balel al Hashem uvachosif gash. She's praying, she's crying. And we have that strange phrase, she's praying unto Hashem, right? Which is not what it's supposed to be. It really should be Batis Balel el Hashem, right? She should pray to God, not on God. And we need to explain. Okay. So that was just the overview of the Pesukim. So now to hit on a couple of points a little bit more in depth that the Mefarshim have. So the Ralbag, Radak as well, they actually begin their commentary to Shmuel with a point that is very, very pertinent for us. Because we spent 2 weeks of introduction, right, by saying we can't really appreciate Sefer Shmuel unless we know what the spiritual state of Klal Yisrael has been like by looking at the end of Shoftim, right? Especially because the Gemara says that Shmuel, the person, wrote Sefer Shoftim, right? So he wrote the beginning of Shmuel. So you are supposed to read these, sorry, you're supposed to read these together. That's one liberating thing on the Zoom shares. I feel like I can still cough even though it's Zoom, you know? So the Ralbag and the Radak both point out that there are very striking similarities between the beginning of Shmuel Aleph and the stories at the end of Shoftim. Because what would happen at those stories at the end of Shoftim? Pasal Micha and Pilegesh Begiva. We had a Levi who was from Har Ephraim. He's traveling around. So Ralbag and Radak both point out that is what we have at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Once again, we have a Levi, right? Because Elkanah is a Levi. He lives in Har Ephraim, and he's getting on the road, right? And he's traveling. So the story begins on the same notes as those disastrous stories at the end of Shoftim. But what's the point? That this story is going to be the Tikkun. Right, we are finally beginning to repair the unbelievable damage and catastrophe of those last 2 weeks. Right, when the Levi in Micha's story went on the road, right, so that he ended up in an Avodah Zarah temple. Right, when the Levi for Pilegesh Regeva went on the road, right, so it ended up with Gilui Arayos and murder. Elkanah is getting on the road with his family, but they're not going to an Avodah Zarah temple, right? They're going to the Mishkan, they're going to Shiloh. Chana's going to daven there, right? And the relationship between Elkanah and Chana, as we'll see, Chana is not getting the understanding she would want, but the Navi does clearly emphasize the love and care that Elkanah has for his wife, right? And the story is going to end, instead of in disaster, but rather with the birth of Shmuel, who's going to really be the one to turn everything around. So it's like a fascinating point Radak and Rabag both make. The note that the story begins on already hints to you, we should be thinking of the disasters at the end of Shoftim. How on earth could this ever be turned around, right? Well, the answer is going to be right here. That is what Chana and then Shmuel are going to pull off. They're going to turn it around. Okay. So we also, I think we mentioned briefly, I'm just scrolling down this source sheet very quickly because we don't need to look at this inside, but the possibility that Elkanah himself was a prophet or from a family of prophets, because the pasuk had this line, Ramatayim Tzofim, right? And Tzofim might mean, you know, those who are seers. What's interesting about this is that if you think about the way that Shmuel begins, so how did the Navi begin, right? There is a man, Elkanah, and we give you his whole lineage, right? It sounds like, you know, like you think of like the Megillas Esther, right? You know, Mordechai, Ben Shimi, et cetera, right? You know, Mordechai is, you know, great parent. Usually when you give the whole lineage of someone, that's who the story is going to be about, right? And then if we're told on top of that, that Elkanah is a Navi, or he's from a family of prophets, so you would expect this to be Elkanah's story, right? And then, of course, it turns out who's Perek Aleph of Shmuel really all about? You know, Elkanah ends up being like a side character, right? Chana is actually the star of the show. What's so interesting about this is that, right, so fundamental to Chana's whole ethos is that she's overlooked, right? She's misunderstood. She's isolated, right? Elkanah doesn't know what's going on. You have Eli the Kohen Gadol, right? It is the person who is the most vulnerable, least understood, and least recognized person in the whole parak who's actually going to be the one to turn everything around. Right. And one way the Navi like gets at that is by, you know, beginning by putting Elkanah the prophet front and center, right? And then, you know, twist, actually it's his wife Chana, right, who's really gonna be the one to provide the cure to what we had at the end of of Shoftim. Okay. So just a couple more points in the Pesukim from last week. So the Malbim has a very important insight into Pasuk Beis, because Pasuk Beis had a bit of a weird formulation. The Torah said that Elkanah has two wives, right? Lo shtei nashim, he has two wives. Shem achas Chana, v'shem hashenis Penina. The name of his first wife was Chana, and the name of the second wife was Penina. Okay, right? Familiar with such a situation. But the Malbim points out, why does the pasuk say Shem Achas Chana, the Shem Ha Shenis Penina? What should the Navi have said? It should have said Shem Ha Achas Chana, the Shem Ha Shenis Penina. Right? Why that? It's a subtle difference, but like once he points it out, you know, it does jump out. So the Malbim says the reason why it's written that way is because Elkanah did not marry them at the same time, right? Shem Achas, meaning Chana was Elkanah's original wife, right? She was his one wife. And then afterwards, he marries Penina subsequently, right? And Malbim says, in his shop, right? Why would Elkanah marry Penina, right? We know the Pasuk says explicitly that Elkanah loved Chana deeply. So why does he marry Penina? So says the Malbim, well, Chana wasn't able to have children, so therefore he subsequently took a second wife. What does this remind us of? And the Malbim says it explicitly. This sends us back to Bereishis, right? Just like Sarah and Hagar, right? You have Sarah and Hagar. So that's what's going on over here. The reason why this is important, a theme that we're going to see this week and into next week, is strong parallels between Chana and the Imahos. And I think the broader message behind that is going to be that Chana actually is going to join the ranks of the Imahos. We're going to have Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and Chana. But you know, we'll have to try to show that. But already, this is like the first point getting to that idea, that Chana is going to become not just the personal mother of Shmuel, but she is going to become a national mother of Klal Yisrael, right? So that's just one point coming out of here. Then going from Pasuk Beis to Pasuk Gimel, so there's something also surprising in the text, right? The Navi says that Elkanah would travel from his town to go to the Mishkan, and what does it say he would do? So it says Lehishtachavos v'lizbach Lashem Tzvakos b'shilo. He would worship, right? He would bow down and he would bring karbanos to Hashem in Shiloh. Fine. And then we're told, Bisham Shine Bine Eli, Chafniu Finchas, Kanim Lashem. There in Shiloh were the two sons of Eli, Chafni and Pinchas. Now, why is that strange? Well, this is the third pasuk of all of Sefer Shmuel. Which Kohen should have been mentioned first? Eli. Exactly, right? The Navi should have said, he went to Shiloh, and in Shiloh, Eli was the Kohen Gadol. Why on earth does the Navi say he went to Shiloh, and in Shiloh were the sons of Eli, Chafni and Pinchas? It's totally backwards, right? So the reason seems to be, and Radak fleshes some of this out, but that, you know, Eli may be the Kohen Gadol, but whose Mishkan is it really? Right? Whose values are the ones which are permeating this Mishkan? Right?
His sons,
exactly. This is really the Mishkan of Chafni and Pinchas. We don't know anything about Chafni and Pinchas yet, right? Because, you know, we cheated. We went out of order. We learned Parak Beis before Parak Aleph. But that's, you know, what the Navi is already doing over here. Chafni and Pinchas, front and center, they are the ones running this Mishkan. In fact, the Radak and Malbim, right? So they both have comments on this, right? Radak says, "Oh, you know why we know why they're being mentioned over here." So Radak says, "Well, we mentioned that Elkanah was bringing karbanos, right? So as soon as we mention the meat that's being offered in the Mishkan." So we're gonna talk about Chafni and Pinchas because, you know, right, as soon as you bring your animal, they're jumping in to take their cut. The Malbim has another suggestion. He says, I'll tell you what's going on. The pasuk said that Elkanah would go right every year, and he would go from his city to the Mishkan. So Chazal described how, you know, Elkanah would try to get people to go on Aliyah L'Rega, right? But it sounds like Elkanah is the only one who's going, right? He would go from his city to the Mishkan. So, right, he's trying to get other people to fulfill the mitzvah as well, but why is only Elkanah going? Why is no one else going on Aliyah L'Regel? So the Malbim says, oh, very simple, because that's where the sons of Eli were, right? Chafni and Pinchas, you want to know why no one is showing up to the Mishkan anymore? Because the sons of Eli are there. That's why these things are being put together in the Pasuk. Read it as only Elkanah is going to the Mishkan because of the misery everyone has to deal with when they face the sons of Eli, right? So, you know, this is a Mishkan that's in need of reform. And one last point that the Radak makes, which will be important for Parak Aleph, is... Right, the Torah says that the Navi says that Elkanah would go lehishtachavos v'lizbalach. Right, he went to the Mishkan to worship and to sacrifice. So he quotes a medrash that number one, tefillah is equivalent to karbanos, and that's why they're put next to each other. And then the medrash continues that actually chaviva tefillah yoser mikol karbanos. Right, prayer is actually more cherished than sacrifices. Right, where does that come from? Because what do the pasuk put first? First, Elkanah is doing the hishtachavaya. Right, first he's bowing down. First he's davening. Subsequently, you bring the karba. So, you know, this we're moving into the world of Chana, who, you know, is like foundational to tefillah. So we're putting these two, you know, value systems opposite each other. We have Elkanah and Chana, who, you know, tefillah is primary, and that's what Rebbe Shalom was all about. On the other hand, we have the sons of Eli, right, who are just in it for the meat. So that's you know, like another subtle point that is coming out of these early psukim. Okay, I think that was it for, yeah, that's all the stuff I wanted to share from last week. Okay, any thoughts or questions, or should we jump on? So then, right, we have the parak continues. So Chana is in Shiloh, right? And she's davening bitterly for her son. So the Navi says, Chana is bitter of soul, and she's praying to Hashem and crying bitterly. Right, she took an oath and she said, Hashem Tzivakos, it's the name of God. Take note of that, we're going to come back to it. If you see the affliction of your handmaid, who's chartani, you remember me. You do not forget your handmaid. Repeatedly, right? She keeps on calling herself a handmaid. You give your handmaid, you know, whether this means male child, Mepharshim say more likely it just means, you know, a child of stature. Nisativ Lashem kol yimei chayav, I'll give him to God all the days of his life. Moreh lo yalal rosho. Here it's translated as a razor shall not go on his head. Right, that Chana is taking a vow that her child shall be a nazir, reminiscent of Shimshon. Right, the irony of that, and you know, as we explore when we get to discuss the personality of Shmuel, is that Shmuel and Shimshon are really complete opposites. Right, because Shimshon, His strength is exclusively physical, right? And Shmuel, we never see Shmuel fight, right? We never see Shmuel as a general, right? His strength is tefillah. So, you know, so you have Shmuel and Shimshon, two personalities who have a superficial similarity, but actually, you know, are like complete opposites, right? So that's one point over there. Okay, so Chana is davening, v'hayaki her basalis balelef nehashem. Right, she was. She continued, you know, praying at great length and intensity before God. The Eli Shomer Espia, right? Eli the Kohen Gadol is watching her mouth. The Chana Himedaberes Aliba Raks Vasad Naos, right? This is very famous. Chana was speaking to the heart. You only saw the lips moving. The Kola Lo Yishamea couldn't hear her voice. Vechshavei Eli LeShikora. Eli thought that she was drunk. Vayomrei La Eli, and Eli says to her, how long will you be drunk for, right? Put away the wine. Now, stop and think for a second. Remember a couple of weeks ago, last week, we saw Eli closer to his children. Right? When Eli told his kids, you know, I'm hearing that you guys are doing things, you know, not very good. You know, why are you doing this? It was like pretty flaccid, uninspiring mussar that Eli was giving his children for, you know, in stealing and abusing and sexual assault, like all those things. You know, and Eli's like, you know, you stop. Right here, he turns to Chana. What is he blasts her? Right? How long are you gonna be drunk for? Right? Take away the wine. Like, you know, where was that tone from Eli when dealing with his own kids? Like totally, you know, totally backwards. Okay. What's Chana's response? So Chana somehow keeps her cool, right? Batan Chana v'tomer, lo Adoni, right? Lo my master, lo my lord. Yishak shasrua chanochi, I'm a woman of difficult spirit. B'yayim v'shechar lo shasisi, I have not drunk any wine. I have not drunk any beer. V'shbo chas nafshi lefnei Hashem, I was pouring out my heart before God. Do not consider your handmaiden to be, right? When we talked about this, the Bas Bliyal, a woman of no yoke, right? I'm just having a hard day and I'm davening to God. Right? Go in peace. May God grant your request. And then Chana answers, Vatomer Timsa Shiv Chascha Chain Beinacha. May your servant find favor in your eyes. Right, and Chana's in a much better mood. Okay, so that's right. That chunk of nine psukim, the prayer of Chana and the interaction with Eli, right, in which Chana comes out looking impressive, and Eli comes out not so much. So let's think about this for a little bit. First of all, this dynamic of Chana and Eli. So, right, we've already been seeing how the Navi holds them up as total opposites, right? Eli is the one who is sitting. Chana is the one who is getting up. Eli is the one who is the Kohen Gadol. Chana is the one who is, you know, the woman who is completely completely alone. Now, what should the job of the Kohen Gadol be? So we know from Aaron Kohen, right? Ohev Shalom v'rodev Shalom. Ohev esabrios v'makarvan la'Torah, right? The person of love and sympathy is supposed to bring people closer to the Ribono Shel Olam. Well, here we have Chana who is desperately alone, right? She's abused by her co-wife. She has no children. Her husband loves her but doesn't understand her. She comes to the Mishkan, you know, and you'd hope the one person who'd be there as a sympathetic ear for this woman in distress would be the Kohen Gadol, right? Would be the descendant of Aaron HaKohen, right? But in reality, it's the exact opposite, right? He blasts her. He misunderstands her. And not only that, but he misunderstands someone who's in the middle of a religious moment, right? Like, she's davening. He's so spiritually alienated that we have the moment, like, you know, one of the greatest moments of tefillah in history, right? It's going to set the rules for how we daven Shmon Esrei. And Eli just totally does not understand it, right? But it gets worse than that. Chana uses that term that I'm not a bas blial, right? Don't think that I'm someone who has no yoke. Well, that's a loaded line because we saw a couple of weeks ago who were the B'nai Blial, who were the quintessential people in the story of Shmuel who have thrown off the yoke. Navi said it was the sons of Eli, right? It's Chafni and Pinchas. So Chafni and Pinchas are the Blial's here, are the ones who are throwing off the yoke. And they're getting a pass. While Chana, is there anyone who is more yoked, who is more burdened than Chana, right? Who is completely alone and completely devastated and completely miserable and also completely loyal to the Ribono Shel Olam, right? There is nobody who is less of a Belial than Chana, right? So they're being held in opposition and Eli's being, you know, soft on his kids and tough on Chana. And there's right a couple more points as well. Chana's religious vocabulary. We have a little bit of it here. I put this down, I put this all together, some of the later psukim going on. Not so surprisingly, in Chana's speech, I just have here psukim that this is dialogue from Chana. Chana uses Shem Hashem all the time. All the time. Right? The Yud Kei Vav Kei. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, right? The first word. The first word we hear Chana say over here, right, is Hashem Tzvakos. Hashem's name again over here, Pasuk Tzvav, she mentions Hashem, again in Pasuk Kav Beis, Pasuk Kav Vav, Pasuk Kav Zayin, she mentions Hashem twice in Pasuk Kav Ches. Yudke Vavke Shem Hashem is always on her mouth. That makes a lot of sense because that's at the center of her whole worldview. What about Eli, right? So I haven't still pointed this out, but I think it's very interesting. How does Eli refer to God? We only hear him do it once over here. And he actually does not use the term Yudke Vavke. Eli says there, L'chila Shalom, ve'elokei Yisrael yitena shelaseich. May the God of Israel grant your request. But Aleph Lamed, right, Kael, is a much more generic term.
Rabbi Gold, did you freeze?
Yeah.
Sent a message. Hopefully you'll see.
You see a message.
He might not even.
He's probably calling back then because he dropped off.
What did you say?
Yeah.
I said he's probably calling back in because he dropped off.
Yeah, you're right.
Can't hear you. You're muted. Yeah.
There you go.
Sorry about that. Not sure why Wi-Fi.
It happens.
No. Okay. Just 1 second. Let's load the share screen back up. Okay. Right. So we were talking about the fact that Hana uses the Shem Hashem all the time, and the one time that Eli talks about Hashem over here, it's just a generic Elokei Yisrael. Okay. Good. Now, second. Yeah. So one last point is that, you know, the tone that we seem to get from Hana is incredibly humble, right? Subservient. You know, first she uses, you know, amascha or shivchascha all the time, and even when, you know, Eli blasts her, right, she turns the other cheek, and like it's like really hard to imagine, right, a person in like that much pain who is also on such a higher spiritual level, right? Like the gap between Chana and Eli is so vast, right? Eli should be the Kohen Gadol, and yet she is so over here and he is so not, right? That it's like almost, you want Chana's response to like be to blast him, right? But somehow she keeps her calm. So we have, you know, who they are, total opposites, and somehow she's staying calm. As we'll see, Chana does a much better, Chana has more patience than Chazal do, as we'll see. So with that background, we have to see some of the things that Chazal have to say in these psukim, because they have some absolutely pivotal insights. First one, right over here, source number one. So the Gemara has a point. Amar Rabbi Elazar, and the Gemara points out, right, the first thing that Chana says, she opens her tefillah by saying Hashem Tzvakos. So the Gemara says, Miyom Shabar Kadosh Baruch Hu Es Olamo, from the day that God created the universe, Lo hay Adam shekra'o laKadosh Baruch Hu Tzvakos. Nobody had called God Tzvakos ad shebasa Chana vekirato Tzvakos. Chana is the first. Chana invents a new name for Hashem, right? Hashem Tzvakos, right? The Lord, Master of Hosts, or Master of Legions, I guess, depending on which siddur you're using. So we have that in our davening all the time, right? Hashem Tzvakos. Right? Kedusha, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakos, Melech Haaretz Kevodo, right? We have that all the time. You look in the Tanakh, Chana is the first person who uses the term. It's not in the Chumash, it's not in Yeshua, it's not in Shoftim. Right here, Shmuel Aleph, Perek Aleph, Chana is the very first person to call Hashem, Hashem Tzvakos. Now, why is that so important? Well, what does Tzvakos actually mean? So I apologize, I meant to put it on the sheet, but it's not in the PDF. The Gemara in Chagiga has Reish Lakish. It's actually the Gemara where Rabbi Akiva and the other Tanaim go up to Pardes, and they, right, Ben Zoma and Ben Azai, and they are damaged, but Rabbi Akiva comes back intact. So in that context, Reish Lakish says that what the word Tzvakos means is Hashem is the master of the heavenly hosts, right? That's the tzava, the assembly. So what's the point? The point is that Chana and as we're going to see, appreciates the unlimited and infinite power of God. So on the one hand, she calls him Hashem, right? Yudke Vavke, the intimate Midas Harachamim relationship. But she's able to couple that with this insight that Hashem is all powerful, right? That's what Hashem Tzivakos means. It seems like a paradox. I can be having a personal conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan. He's Hashem Yudke Vavke, while simultaneously recognizing that he is all powerful, that he is Tzivakos, right? And that's going to come to the fore next week when we see Chana's Tfila in Parak Beis. Now, of course, that's in, once again, in strong opposition to Eli's kids, right? Who, as we saw last time, thought that they had all the leverage over God because we're born into the priesthood, so there's nothing that you can do about it, right? But Eli himself, who didn't believe that God had the ability to forgive, right? Which was like the core of the problem. So they don't recognize Hashem's all-powerful nature. Chana does. Fine. I think that there's also, I think the Navi is also doing a little bit of a wordplay on this as well. Because if you recall, that shocking line the Pasuk had, where it described what Eli's sons were doing, and it said, Eis asher yishkevun es hanashim hatsov os pesach ohal maweh, right? That they were lying with the women who were assembling, right, at the Mishkan. And I'll just ask, is it a coincidence that Chana founds the name Tzivakos for God, right? She is the first one to call Hashem, Hashem Tzivakos. That is like one of her lasting all-time contributions to Klal Yisrael. And then the very next parak, you have the sons of Eli who are sleeping with women in the Mishkan. And remember, Rashi said, read that literally. And the Navi uses the word Tzov Os, right? Which sounds so similar because it's like the exact same word, right? It's assembly. What are we doing, right? You have Chana and the sons of Eli, and you look at them and they're in the same place, both in the Mishkan, but they are complete opposites because Chana is the one who is actually turning this Mishkan into what it is supposed to be about. In fact, the Mefarshim, the Radak, and the Targum Yonasan, they were trying to explain which women are we talking about? Why are they in the Mishkan? So Radak said that they are women who had given birth and are coming to bring their karbanos. And Targum Yonasan had said they were women who were coming to daven in the Mishkan. Well, either way, we think of Chana in both of those cases, right? Because Chana is coming to the Mishkan later on in Parak Aleph after having given birth to her child. And of course, Chana comes to the Mishkan to daven. So, right, you just have this like this huge, titanic, epic opposition. Right, as bad as the sons of Eli are, Chana is that good and is that opposed to what they're doing and is going to turn around what the disaster of Klal Yisrael looks like. Okay, right. And on that same note, the idea that Chana appreciates that there is no limit to Hashem's power. He said this is going to be a theme in Sefer Shmuel. Right, those who recognize that Hashem it sounds so simple, but it's not. Those who recognize Hashem is all powerful. And those who don't. So the Navi had that line about, right, that Chana swore, right, if Hashem, you give me a child, more lo ye'ale al rosho, which, right, one understanding is it means a razor and that she's making Shmuel a Nazir. And that's important, as we'll talk about when we get to Shmuel in a couple of weeks. But Rashi quotes Targum Yonasan. Now, what does it mean? More as in power. Merut anash, the power of man shall not be on him. Meaning Shmuel will not answer to any man. Shmuel will only answer to God, right? Shmuel's only going to answer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not impressed by Kohen Gadol. He's not impressed by kings. Doesn't matter if they're Shaul or Agag of Amalek, right? We are bringing back the recognition that the only being that we are intimidated by, that we hold over us, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is what Chana is vowing when she says, give me a child so that this is the message I can convey. And that's going to be Shmuel's own legacy. Okay. Now, as you said, the Navi like pounded home how humble and forgiving Chana was, right? She calls herself again and again, Amascha, Amascha, Shivchascha, and we're like, come on, you're talking to Eli, who is so wrong-headed about the whole thing. So, and I said that, you know, that Eli, that Chana in a way does a better job of keeping her calm than Chazal do. Because Chazal, like they and this can't be. Like there has to be somewhere where Chana fights back. And so Chazal have unbelievable medrash on what is going on over here. That while at the surface, we see Chana maintaining her calm, underneath everything that she's saying is a very strong and very principled stance. So Chana says to Eli, right? She says, Lo Adoni, right? Which is the pshat, the surface level first reading. You know, he says, you're drunk. And she says, you know, no, you know, my Lord, I am not drunk. So Rashi quotes the Gemara, which says, actually, there's a total deeper meaning to this. Lo Adon Ata B'Davar Zeh. Meaning, read the pasuk, not no, my Lord. Read it, you are not my Lord. Lo Adoni, you are not the Adon. Lo Adon Ata B'Davar Zeh. You are not, you may be the Kohen Gadol, you may have the Big Day Kahuna, but you are not the boss over here. Galisa ba'atzmacha, you have demonstrated she'ein ruach hakodesh shara alecha. You've shown that you do not have the ruach hakodesh she'teda she'ini shikaret yain, because otherwise you would have known that I'm not drunk. You've exposed yourself. Now, next week we look at, you know, Chana's tefillin perek beis. We'll see that Chana herself certainly does have the ruach hakodesh, right? So Eli is the Kohen Gadol. He is the one who is supposed to have the ruach hakodesh. He is supposed to be the Adon. But actually, he's not, right? Chana's the one with the Ruach HaKodesh. And Rei Rashi puts in here, Lo Adoni, let's take a stance. You are totally wrong, and you are not the one on top, right? Chana really is the one running the show. Now, where is this coming from in the Pesukim? Besides the fact that it's like a brilliant local read of those two words, right? And the way that you could understand it, know my Lord versus you are not my Adon. But there was a lot of turmoil in what Chana was saying, because Chana did keep on talking about her ka'as, right? And she says to Eli, you know, it's rov ka'asiv, rov sichi, it's my emotion, my anger. I'm like, I don't know, you don't really see the anger so much in what she's saying, right? In fact, in her speech, she seems to be keeping an incredible calm. Where's all the anger? So Chazal talk about what exactly Chana's tefillah was. Remember, there was that strange line about Tispalel al Hashem, right? She prayed on to God. So the Gemara says that in Chana's tefillah, her prayer to Hashem was aggressive. And it gives different examples as to what. For example, the Gemara says, you know, Hashem, you gave me the ability to nurse. You gave, you know, all creatures the ability to reproduce, you know. Why is it not put into use? Why is this, you know, it's like an affront to the creation. There's an amazing guy. It's Rabbi Elazar who has all these lines in the Gemara. Right. Chana said, if you shall surely see my pain, right, then give me a child. Gemara is an amazing drasha. Rabbi Elazar says, Amra Chana lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chana says to Hashem, Ribono Shalom. Right. Here's the deal. Imra'o, if you see, good. We're splitting it up. Right? If you see, you shall see. If you see, you give me a child, Baruch Hashem. Im lav tir'eh. But if you don't listen to me, you're going to see. What does that mean? Chana's telling Hashem, one, by hook or by crook, you're going to give me a child. Right? How can I do that? How can Chana force Hashem to give her a child? So we'll read the Gemara, and then we'll try to figure out what's underneath it. Eilech ve'estater b'fnei al kanabali. Right? If you don't give me a child, I will go and I will seclude myself with another man in front of my husband, Elkanah. And then what's going to happen? We're going to have the sota ritual, right? They gave him the mistradna, mashkuli me sota. They're going to give me the sota water to drink. And then what happens if an innocent woman has to go through the sota ritual, right? Torah guarantees you have a child, right? The i'ata osa tarascha plaster. You're not going to make your Torah worth this piece of plaster. Shneamar v'niksa v'nizra azara. Torah gave a guarantee. If you go through Sota ritual, you're going to have a kid. So in this Gemara, says Chana to Hashem, right? You know, Kaviyachol, I'm putting on the pressure, right? I am forcing you to give me a child because either listen to my prayer or I'm going to pull out the sotum. So besides the fact that that's like, you know, extremely aggressive. So let's just think, what's that driving at, right? Well, what's the whole point of the sota, right? And why the sota is the one who is, of course, secretly sinning, right? And the falsely accused sota is the quintessentially misunderstood person, right? So, you know, Chana is all alone, right? Chana is already nistar. She is secluded from everyone else, right? But of course, it's a completely, you know, she's completely innocent of any crime, right? So look, for all intents and purposes, you know, no one understands me as it is, right? Elkanah doesn't understand, Kohen Gadol doesn't understand, the people don't understand, and I'm all alone, right? So, you know, once that's the case, okay, we'll have the sota ritual, which is about, it's all about humiliation. Well, I'm already humiliated. It's all about illegal seclusion. Well, I'm already secluded and isolated as it is, right? But I'll say that Chana on the surface, right? There's calmness, there's patience, but underneath there's so much emotion, right? And there's the vast gap between Chana and Eli, and there's the way that Chana is praying quietly to Hashem, right? She's not screaming at him, but it's silence with a real ferocious intensity. Okay, so then just to close out the parak, right? So we don't have to read most of this inside, but there's one piece that we need to explore. So we know, right? They Elkanah and Co leave the Mishkan, right? Baruch Hashem, Chana has a child. Vayizkereha Hashem, Hashem remembers her again, right? Evoking, you know, Rachel, evoking Sarah, right? So now the next barren woman who's remembered is Chana, right? She has a child. She names him Shmuel because I asked him from Hashem, or borrowed him from Hashem, right? Recognition, of course, that this is God's gift, right? And then, really, really interestingly, after a couple of years, they go back to the Mishkan. She brings Shmuel to Hashem. They offer a karban, and then the pasuk is just a strange pasuk. So they shecht the bull, right? They bring a karban. Torah says they shecht the bull. They view as hanar el Eli, and they bring the child to Eli. And then batomer bi adoni. Chana says to Eli, chai nafshecha adoni. Right? Very very subservient again. Ani yishani sevasimcha bezel espalel Hashem. I am the woman who stood before you praying to Hashem. Right? No, she uses Hashem's name again. I pray for this child. Hashem gave me my request. And I'm lending him back to Hashem, right? And he's going to be here. Call Shaul Lashem, right? And she will be given to Hashem. So Chana, right? The first word she says in the parak is Yukevavke. The last word she says in the parak is Yukevavke. All the time she's mentioning Yukevavke. Very nice. But the dialogue is kind of weird. Why do they shech the bull, and then they bring the kid to Eli, and then, right, Chana has this, like, kind of long and intense back and forth. So I know it's 1:30, it's okay, I just want to, anyone has to jump off, go ahead, but I just want to get this one Gemara in, because it's really, really important. So what was going on? So that same Rabbi Elazar from the Gemara, who had the drashos about what Chana was saying to Eli, and what Chana was saying to Hashem, so he fills in the gaps over here. What's the story? Says the Gemara, Elanara's asked Balalti, I pray for this child. Am Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says the following: Shmuel more halacha lifnei rabo haya. What's happening in this situation is Shmuel was teaching the halacha in front of his master. What's going on? Shmuel's 2 years old. Who's talking about Shmuel? Let's see. Shneamar, the Navi said, Vayeshchatu es hapar. First, they slaughtered the bull, the vius anar al Eli, and then they brought the lad to Eli. So, he asks, Mishum vayeshchetu es hapar heviu anar al Eli? Because they slaughtered the bull, they bring the child to Eli. Why are these connected? El amr lahen Eli, where Eli said, Kiru Kohen Lacy Velishcha. Call a Kohen to slaughter the bull. Chazanu l'Shmuel to have a Mahadri Basar Kohen l'Mishcha. So Shmuel sees that instead of that they're looking for a Kohen to shach the bull. And they spend a lot of time doing this. Okay. Amar Lahu, so Shmuel said to the people, Lamalachu Laduri Basar Kohen l'Mishcha. Why are you looking for a Kohen to shach the bull? Halacha is, in the Beis HaMikdash, even though a Kohen needs to do most of the karbanos, Shchinta Bizar Kshera. The shachting of the animal, the very first step, can be done by a non-Kohen. Okay? So, right, they're looking for a Kohen to slaughter the bull. Shmuel says, you do not need a Kohen. Haisula Kami to Eli, they bring Shmuel in front of Eli, right? And Eli says, Amar Lei Minala, ha, how do you know this? So then Shmuel responds, right? Shmuel tells him where in the Chumash you can see that you can derive that a non-Kohen can shach the karba. Okay, fine. Skip a little bit. So Eli says to Shmuel, Amar Lei Meimer Shaper Ka'amrit, you're saying good, very nice. Miyamor Halacha Bifnei Rabachat, but you're teaching Halacha in front of your master, you're 2 years old, and I'm the Kohen Gadol, you're saying what the Halacha is, that's inappropriate. V'chol Hamor Halacha Bifnei Rabo Chayev Misa, anyone who does that, that's eligible to the death penalty by heaven. And then Chana jumps in, As Yachana V'katzavcha Kamei Ani Yisha Nitzav Esim Chabazet, and Chana basically says, I am the woman who stood here last year, right? Hashem gave me this child, you know, do not try to get him punished. Eli says to Chana, you know, let me punish him, and I'll pray for you to get another child. And then Chana says, no, Amrulay al Hanar Hazes Malal. Right? I pray for this child, I don't want another one. So what on earth is going on? So, like, let's be quick, but it's super important. A few points. First of all, right, the idea of Shmuel teaching the halacha in front of Eli. So what's that theme? That's the theme we've had this whole parak. That in theory, Eli is supposed to be the Rav, right? Eli is supposed to be the Kohen Gadol, and yet at the beginning of the parak, it was Chana, right, who was actually the one who was, you know, in conversation with Hashem and showing us how to daven, etc. Right? Lo Adoni, I have Ruach HaKodesh, and you don't. And now, right, that same, I guess, dynamic is just being copied over to Shmuel, right? Now it's Shmuel who is the true master, while Eli is not. And furthermore, what was Shmuel's message in this Gemara, right? So the Gemara is Shmuel saying that a non-Kohen can do the Shechita. So the message behind that is that the reason why a non-Kohen can shach a karban, the Nitziv writes about this, is that we want to have the Kohen, the non-Kohen, involved in some way in the process in the Beis HaMikdash. So you get to do the first step, right? You get to shach the karban. Eli and his sons, who think that the priest, that the Mishkan and the Karbanos are just the birthright of the Kohanim because of how they were born, right? Well, you know, Shmuel is coming in this Gemara. He's telling them there is a role, there is a place for non-Kohanim in the Mikdash, in the Mikdash as well. And as we'll see when we look at Shmuel going forward, Shmuel is actually going to play a role as like a pseudo-Kohen, right? So that's one more point. And then finally, right, the Gemara just drives home this dynamic at the very end between Eli and Chana, right? Eli says, you don't need this child. You know, I'll just, you know, we'll give you another one. And there is no human element there, right? Again, Aaron Cohen would never have said something like that, right? And what's Chana's response, right? Chana's response of El Hanar Hazeh Espalalti, I prayed for this child. That is just very, very simply Chana as a mother, right? That it's, you're saying, you know, swap in one kid for another kid. What does that mean? This is my child. This is my son. This is who I prayed for. And there's no compensation, kid A for kid B. If you know anything about parenthood, right? Every child is unique. Every parent's love for their child is unique. Chana gets that and Eli doesn't, right? So it's not just in the realm of Bein Adam Lamakom, of understanding what Hashem is all about, where Chana's on the ball and Eli is not, but inevitably that bleeds into Bein Adam LaChaveiro as well, right? And particularly the role of being a mother, right? So we end the parak then with Chana as a quintessential mother, Chana as someone who, as we're going to see, Ruach HaKodesh, Chana as someone who is, you know, really espousing the values that Aaron HaKohen is supposed to stand for, being in the Mishkan, talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? Bringing people together, love for her kids. Eli's kind of falling down on the job, but Chana, and now at the end of the parak, transitioning to Shmuel, are going to begin to turn it around. Right, and the parak ends Vayishtachu Sham Lashem once again, right, with prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's Chana and Eli, right? We, as bad as things were, you know, last week and 2 weeks ago, and as much as the legacy of Aaron had been abandoned, it's all starting to come back. Aaron's values are coming back. The values of the Avos are coming back, right? We're beginning to undo Pilegesh Begiva because we're seeing some parallels. We'll see more next week, right, between Chana and the Imahos. And so next week, when we turn to Perek Beis, right, we'll explore Chana's tefillah, and we'll try to just put a capstone on her personality and her contributions before we move forward to look at the career of Shmuel. Okay, so
thank you so much.
Thanks for
thank you.